Josie sat on a wall outside Rufus's school, waiting for Rufus. "It's the first time he's ever been rude to a teacher," the head teacher had told her, "and I want him to realize that his behavior is in no way acceptable." Rufus had called his form teacher a stupid cow. He was being detained for 30 minutes. Poor little Rufus, living in a household where rows were almost a daily occurrence, where everybody seemed to be in the exhausted, angry habit of calling each other names. That Rufus should explode today didn't really surprise Josie. How could she be surprised at anything, having herself, only the night before, hit Becky? She didn't think she had ever, in her adult life, hit anyone before. But there had been a moment in Becky's bedroom when she had known that she was literally beside herself, that she was going to do something violent. And she had. The evening had never boded well, with tensions mounting. Becky was in her room playing deafening music. She had not, as she'd been asked, put supper in the oven or laid the table. "I'll go and find her," Matthew said wearily. "No," Josie said. She felt suddenly dangerously energetic. "It's no good your going. I will." And she raced up the stairs. She banged on Becky's bedroom door. "Becky! Shove off!" Becky shouted. Josie opened the door. The room was strewn with clothes and shoes and bags and stank like a school cloakroom. It was also shuddering with noise. "Turn that off!" Becky, who was standing with a forbidden cigarette in her hand, merely stared. Josie seized the tape player, fumbling with the volume control. "That's mine. I'm not harming it. I merely want to be able to hear myself speak." She was trembling slightly. "Becky."
"What?"
"You didn't put the supper in the oven. You didn't lay the table."
"Dad never said."
"No, but I did. I asked you to." Becky climbed onto Claire's bed, still in her boots. She blew out a nonchalant steam of smoke.
"You don't count."
"I live in this house. I run it. I'm married to your father." Becky gave a snort of contempt.
"That doesn't give you any rights."
She shot Josie a glance.
"Won't even last."
"What won't?"
"This stuff with my father."
Josie found that her fists had clenched. "Becky, may I tell you something? If you were to succeed in breaking up my marriage to your father, you wouldn't rejoice. You'd be terrified. Because it wouldn't be a victory. It would just be another loss on top of everything you've lost already." Becky looked at her for a long, hard time, as if trying to understand. Then she flung her head back and began to laugh, great derisive cackles of laughter. For a moment, Josie had watched her, and then, without saying anything, she slapped Becky hard on the side of her face. "Sometimes," Matthew said tiredly some 3 hours later, "I feel I haven't got 4 children and a wife in this house, but 5 children. Every instinct in Josie clamoured to scream at him that she often felt like an abandoned child. Instead, she said in a voice tight with self-control,
"Is Becky back?"
"No," Matthew said, "but she will be. She'll go round to a friend's to give me a fright. But she'll be back." Josie felt, rather than saw him, stand up.
"Where are you going?"
"To do some work."
"Now?"
"Just an hour. I may be in for promotion. The head's moving on."
"Oh," Josie said faintly.
"Good." She tried to say something more congratulatory, but found she couldn't.
"I'm here,"
Rufus said now. Josie looked round. Rufus was standing 2 feet away, pale and subdued, his uniform very symmetrically in place, as if someone had arranged him before he emerged from the school building. Josie held out her arms to him.
"Oh, darling. It's okay," he said. "Mrs. Taylor."
He stopped. "Was she nice about it?" He nodded.
I'm not allowed to play football for a week. When they reached Barrett Road, they'd hardly turned up the concrete strips of the drive before the kitchen door opened and Matthew emerged.
Thank God you're here. Becky isn't back, and no one's seen her. She didn't go where I thought she'd gone last night, and today she didn't go to school. The police are here. They've been waiting to talk to you.
I'm so sorry, Josie said. She sat on the edge of Becky's bed. Becky lay in exactly the position in which she'd woken, after sleeping for 19 hours, with her head turned away from Josie. I really am. Whatever either of us said, I should never, ever have hit you. Becky didn't move. She lay as if Josie simply didn't exist, as if she'd never spoken. She'd been found outside Stafford, in a lorry driver's cafe. Presumably, she'd been aiming to get to Herefordshire. The police had said Becky had had a bit of a scuffle some time in the 2 days and 3 nights of her absence, probably with one of the truck drivers who'd given her a lift, but that it hadn't been serious. Becky didn't seem relieved to be home, merely resigned. Matthew had wept when he heard Becky was safe. So had Josie and Claire. Matthew had taken Claire on his knee, and then Rory had come to stand by them. Matthew had put an arm out and pulled him in. I'm in disgrace, thought Josie. She went into the kitchen and cried into the sink. Rufus came into the kitchen. You didn't do it on purpose, he said. I did, at the last minute. At the last minute, it was definitely on purpose. You can't help the last minute, he said. No one can. Josie shot him a quick, grateful glance. Hello, Matthew said. Becky turned her head. Beside the bed was a tray bearing an untouched bowl of soup and an uneaten sandwich. Josie brought you lunch, I see. I didn't want it. He sat on the edge of the bed. Josie's taken time off work. She's staying here especially to look after you. I didn't ask her, Becky said. She doesn't have to. She feels she does. That's her problem. No, it's her sense of responsibility. Becky gave the food on the tray a brief, contemptuous glance. I'm not eating it. Matthew leaned forward.
I've got something to say to you.
Jesus, it's not about what happened. All I care about is that you're safe. Becky yawned. I love Josie, Matthew said. Becky froze. I want you to be very certain of that. I want you to be very certain of something else, too. I love you. Whatever happens, you're my daughter, and I love you. Becky made a face. But you seem to think, Matthew said, that I have to choose, but I don't. I can have both relationships.
You can't, she said rudely.
I can, he said. He stood up. It's you that can't, if that's what you decide. The house was very quiet. Becky sat on the edge of the bed. She was hungry. She found half a packet of crisps in the boys' bedroom and devoured them. She had no cigarettes. The last cigarette had been a week ago, when the man who'd run the cafe where the police had come had given her one. He'd also given her a fried breakfast, which made her drool to remember.
"Stupid bloody kid," he said to her, as if running away ever solved anything.
But he'd given her the fags and the breakfast, and when the police came, he stood by her table to defend her, if necessary. It wasn't necessary. She'd never tell anyone until her dying day. But Becky had been so thankful to see the police come in, she'd nearly run into their uniformed arms. Downstairs, the telephone began ringing. After a moment or two, the sitting room door opened and Josie called, "Becky?" Her voice sounded odd. Becky went slowly out onto the landing. Josie was at the foot of the stairs.
It's your mother. She doesn't sound very well. She sounds a bit fraught.
Becky clumped down the stairs. Nadine always sounded fraught, especially if she had to ring Barrett Road, had to risk speaking to Josie. She picked up the telephone receiver.
Mum?
Nadine was crying.
You've got to come. I'm not allowed to come to you. Your father won't let me. And now this has happened.
What has?
Becky, I can't cope. You've got to come. You've got to come quickly.
What's happened?
Are you hurt?
I don't know, Nadine said, her voice ragged with tears.
I don't know.
Becky swallowed.
Have you taken anything? Any pills or anything?
No, Nadine said.
No, but I need you. I have to see you. I have to.
Becky heard the telephone go down. She stood for a moment and then walked slowly into the kitchen. Josie was sitting with an open checkbook in front of her, paying bills. She looked up as Becky came in.
All right.
Becky hesitated.
Not really.
Josie put her pen down. What's the matter?
She was crying. She sounded awful. She kept asking me to go.
To Herefordshire?
She said I must. She sounded desperate. I've got to go.
How will you get there?
I don't know.
I could take you, Josie said.
You?
I've got the car today. It's outside. Just leave a note for your father.
He'll be furious. What'll I say?
I don't know. That's up to you.
Rufus sat in his bedroom in Bath and contemplated his new curtains. They were green and cream checked. Rufus had chosen them. Elizabeth had taken him to the curtain place, and when the saleslady referred to her as Rufus's mother, she had said in a perfectly normal voice, "I'm not Rufus's mother, but I am soon going to be his stepmother." Afterwards, she never mentioned it. He was beginning to see. She could be trusted not to make a fuss.
"Rufus," Dale said. She was leaning against the bedroom door. "Very smart curtains."
Rufus was never quite sure what he felt about Dale. He knew she was his half-sister. He'd also known all his life that Dale didn't like his mother, and that had always been disconcerting. In fact, he always liked the house better when Dale wasn't in it.
"You've got such a nice view," Dale said. "I don't know why I didn't choose this room when I was little. I expect I chose mine so I could see the street and my mother and father coming home."
She turned round from the window.
"I may be coming back here to live for a bit."
Rufus said nothing.
"I've sold my flat," Dale said, "and I haven't bought another one yet. So, I think I'll come home for a while."